Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Christina Laurie. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers the abrupt end of the Kingston Writers' Festival.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
After 16 years of providing literary programming, Kingston Writers' Fest has announced that they will be ceasing operations. The news was shared in a release from the board of directors last week, citing ongoing financial challenges as the reason for the festival folding. The board states that declining attendance, increased operational costs, and reduced revenue since the pandemic have created deficits that cannot be overcome, with reserves being depleted years ago to sustain the festival. While costs were cut in 2024 with a scaled-down event and more intimate setting at the screening room, the changes were not enough to save the festival. Ara McCulley, who has worked for the festival for the past 11 years and has been artistic director since 2020, was told at the end of November that the festival's run would be coming to an end and that staff and contractors would be laid off. McCulley sat down with CFRC to discuss some of the reasons behind the decision to end the festival. To start us off, I was wondering if you could just get into some of the background here and some of the factors that led to this decision that we all learned last week.
It's been certainly a challenging environment for arts organizations in general since COVID first hit. There's been a lot of articles, a lot of conversation, there's been other festivals that have folded as well. It's a combination of different issues that have sort of brought us here. Part of it is the age of the core demographic for lots of arts organizations, which tends to be a little older. And those are the individuals that are more susceptible to illness from things like COVID and the flu. And as a festival that takes place at the end of September, which is sort of the start of that season, I think it's led to hesitancy from people to go out that would have gone out before because they don't want to get sick. I think, too, people just got used to not going to events during COVID. And I think the kinds of things that people want to go to now that it's back are perhaps lighter, like things like movie and music that is kind of easier to consume and doesn't take, sometimes the emotional and mental bandwidth that, reading a book for 20 hours might take. We've seen cuts at all levels. A lot of government organizations sort of helped organizations during COVID, but as soon as that help stopped, most of them went to less than what they were giving organizations in 2019. So it's sort of, we're still trying to regain audiences. Our audience was about 30% below what it was pre-COVID. And so when you combine that with having your funding cut by 5 to 10%, at all levels, and then losing some corporate sponsors and seeing that drop in ticket sales, it's just, it's a lot of issues to try and navigate at the same time as you're trying to put on a festival. And I think part of it, too, is just trying to figure out what people want. We have one festival per year. And so experimenting can happen a little bit in the off season, but we don't know from year to year what the outcome is going to be. So, our first year in person back, we were like, okay, well, we'll just plan as if we'll see a little bit less in attendance, but we'll just do the festival as we always have. And it took a couple of cycles to realize like that formula wasn't going to work anymore. So, you know, we did make some major changes here in 2024. But, you know, it takes a lot of time. And there is obviously a risk in keeping going when it could lead to you going further into debt. And that wasn't something that the board was comfortable doing for continuing on into 2025.
While the festival has been stretching to make ends meet for a number of years, McCulley spoke to the abruptness and finality of this announcement. While the statement from the board of directors stated the financial challenges make running the festival, quote, impossible, McCulley also expressed disappointment that more efforts were not made to save the festival. When you got the news at the end of November, I was wondering, was this kind of a big surprise for you, or were you kind of anticipating it with the struggles that you've been facing in the last few years?
The abruptness of it came as a bit of a surprise. I mean, I don't think it was a surprise to any of, like, there's one other staff member, but we have some contractors as well. I think, you know, we try to be really transparent with everyone we work with, so we all kind of knew the situation that we were in. I think the finality of it was a surprise. You know, Kingston has been incredibly supportive to the festival for the 16 years that it's been running. And to not give supporters one last chance to, you know, like if we had run a GoFundMe or something like that, one last chance to kind of just get us over this hurdle and into 2025 was disappointing for us. My colleague Jennifer and I had been doing a lot of work in developing a business plan to make the festival more sustainable. But, you know, again, these things take time. And so, yeah, I mean, it was sudden, but I mean, we all were realistic about the issues that the festival was facing.
In a social media post, McCulley shared that the wind down of the festival has not been smooth, with the abrupt ending, her and other staff not receiving severance pay, and missing paychecks for staff and contractors. Here's what McCulley had to say on these issues. The wind down has not been a smooth process from what I've gathered, including you not receiving your severance that you're owed and a lack of communication with staff members. I was wondering if you could speak to that a bit.
Yeah, I mean, not only severance, I mean, we were not given any notice when we were let go. So staff was not paid for the month of November. So we're owed that salary. Also, my colleague hadn't cashed her October check, so she's actually owed 2 months of salary. And then as someone who's been working with the festival for 11 years, I should have received severance pay. And that has not materialized either. And so it made for a really difficult December. Certainly trying to navigate that with no income coming in. So, you know, and we're not the only ones that weren't getting paid. And that was one of the reasons that I made a post on my own Facebook about it, was just as the face of the organization, as the person that people know, I'm the person that's getting asked. And if I'm being quiet about bills that aren't getting paid, the assumption is that I'm ignoring people, or that I'm willfully withholding money. And I just wanted to let people know that, like, staff and contractors are in the exact same boat as everybody else in this situation, unfortunately.
McCulley has contacted the province regarding the lack of severance pay. The Writers' Fest Board of Directors did not respond to requests for comment from CFRC. McCulley had the following parting words for Writers' Fest attendees and message for Kingstonians in the literary community. I was wondering, just reflecting on the past 11 years that you've been with the festival, if you had any parting words for those who've enjoyed the festival over many years, and what perhaps the Kingston literary community can look forward to still.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that was the saddest for me was with the suddenness of the decision and the request that we not be public about the fact that we're closing, is that I didn't get an opportunity to say anything to the public. You know, it's I've been going to the festival since 2010. So I've been there, you know, attending for 15 years, working there for 11. Obviously, it's an organization that's really near and dear to my heart. I've made some incredible connections within the community, with other arts partners, with local authors, with artists, and just the amazing audiences that have come year after year. And so, you know, I really just wanted to say what a pleasure and a privilege it's been to be part of this journey. You know, Kingston is very special. It's got a really vibrant arts community. Authors loved coming to this festival because of the audiences that came out and their thoughtful questions and their engagement. That's something I think that's really special and that we should be really proud of. And, you know, speaking to some of my colleagues, some of the contractors and staff that have worked with the festival, nobody wants this to be goodbye. So I think there are hopes that, you know, we can do at least one-off author events here in Kingston. This is leaving a huge vacuum for a really important, like there is no other literary festival that happens here. And so for authors, that's a huge vacuum that, you know, as amazing as something like Novel Ideas, they can only program so many book launches in a year, right? And so to be able to offer a platform in some way, I think is something that we really hope to do, and to continue to celebrate the amazing authors that are here in the community and in Canada as well.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you, Chris. Next up, I'll be reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the Gananoque Marina Project. The Gananoque Municipal Marina is undergoing a major transformation as Kehoe Marine Construction makes steady progress on its renovation project. A recently released video update shared on the Town of Gananoque's Facebook page showcases the work completed so far. Curtis Ottenhoff, Kehoe Marine's senior project manager, led the video tour detailing the upgrades being made to the marina's infrastructure. The aging timber crib structure is being replaced by a modern dock built on steel H-piles, reinforced with a steel frame and topped with a concrete deck. To establish this foundation, the team is using a barge-mounted excavator equipped with a pile-driving attachment to vibrate the H-piles into place, ensuring stability and durability. The H-piles are large steel beams shaped like the letter H. Despite these significant changes, the new dock will maintain the same footprint as the previous one, while introducing modern amenities including upgraded electrical and plumbing systems. Ottenhoff emphasized the importance of the project for Gananoque's waterfront access. The project remains on track for completion by March, promising improved functionality and a refreshed look for the marina just in time for the 2025 boating season. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Next, I'll be reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about local reactions to the future of the federal Liberal Party. Early last week, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made shockwaves throughout the country and within the Liberal Party as he announced his intent to step down as party leader for the upcoming federal election. Trudeau said it's become clear that he is no longer the right option to lead the country and party. Kingston and the Islands MP Mark Gerritsen says the writing was on the wall, and the announcement didn't come as a shock to him, with the expectation that Trudeau would step aside, building over the last several months. Gerritsen has worked as an MP alongside Trudeau for the better part of a decade, and he believes this transition has more to do with the country and party simply needing a new voice than it is an indictment on Trudeau himself. He says in speaking with constituents, the general feedback on programs introduced by the Trudeau government is positive, but it seems people are just ready for a new voice at the top. Gerritsen said he gives Trudeau a lot of credit for arriving at that conclusion, even if some are critical that it took too long. The Kingston MP says that what the Liberals need now is someone who can take the fight to Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre in a more direct and confrontational way. Gerritsen said his pick for the job would be recently appointed Finance Minister Dominic LeBlanc. However, LeBlanc said this week that he won't be running for the role, as did Foreign Minister Melanie Joly. Candidates for leadership have until January 23rd to declare and will have to pay a $350,000 entry fee to enter the race. Names like Chrystia Freeland and Mark Carney have been speculated as possible replacements. Gerritsen says he believes the change in voice and messaging will be enough to keep the Liberals competitive in the upcoming election. And he also says that despite projections showing the Liberal Party as the third place choice for Kingston and the Islands, Gerritsen thinks he can retain his seat in the riding. The party is expected to officially announce its new leader on March 9th, with Parliament being prorogued until March 24th. Thank you to Owen Fullerton for that story. Over to the local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, Ted Evans, about the return of Loyalist Township's Family Day event.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township has announced that their Family Day event for 2025 will be taking place at the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center. As reconstruction is still underway in the aquatic area, the event will be taking place mainly in the arena, library, and parking lot. The event lasts from noon until 2 p.m. and is free to attend. Public skating will be open for the duration of the event, with ice resurfacing taking place midway through. The skating portion is sponsored by Lorna Willis and Lynn Wiminga. Councillor Paul Proderick speaks about some of the potential highlights from the day.
The canteen's going to be open, and at that time we also hope that some of the Amherst U Jets will join the people who wish to participate in that. And in the parking lot, we're going to have the Loyalist Emergency Services truck, which is always a popular, activity for the young ones to get a look at it and go through it.
Proderick lists some of the other activities taking place at the event and offers a note to residents.
We've got a Lego station, a coloring station, some temporary tattoos, maybe a bouncy castle and just dance, and then a photo booth from Photo Booth Kingston will be there. Hope you can join us at the WJ Recreation Center and maybe take away a little bit of the winter blahs.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next is the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE Prince Edward County, Brenda Little, with a story about Prince Edward County's New Year's Levy event.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Picton's Community Center was bustling with activity at the recent Prince Edward County New Year's Levy, where, for the first time, the focus was on families. Traditionally, the levy is geared to adults, where the mayor talks about the highlights of the previous year and the plans for the municipality going forward. This year, kids' events were included with cookie decorating, a book and reading corner, lots of treats to eat, a fire truck to explore, and free skating in the arena. Mayor Ferguson talked about several highlights from 2024, including shovels in the ground for the new hospital, Leeward House, the county's first transitional home for the homeless, building of the new retirement home, and the construction of the water wastewater plant. His big hope for 2025 is the refurbishment of County 49 that is listed as one of the worst roads in Ontario and Canada. I spoke to a few people about the event.
Hi, Olivia. Are you having fun today? Yes. What are you doing? Decorating a cookie?
Yeah, and then eating.
Oh, eating those special candies. Right. Good for you. And how did you find out about this?
So my husband Tyler is the MPP, so he was invited to the event to help support the community, so we thought we'd bring the whole family.
Lisa Lindsay, the county's Director of Recreation and Community Facilities, talks about the event.
Historically, it has been more of an adult listening to the municipal message of what we've accomplished and what's coming, but I think the mayor this year has wanted to turn it into more of a family-friendly that our residents go from birth right up till to the elderly, and I think that's what this is representing here today.
And Councillor St. Jean shares his thoughts about the event.
I'm very happy with the way this event turned out, having so many younger families and people coming out to enjoy the free skating. It's absolutely fantastic, and I think it's I think the mayor and all of his staff did a great job of organizing this to make it happen, make this New Year's Levy a family event, and he did. So, congratulations.
And here is Sam Branderhorst, who is the councillor for Athol and the youngest woman to take office in Prince Edward County. She's persuading a young lad to check out the hot chocolate stand.
Any hot chocolate left?
There is, I think.
There is?
Yeah. And did you, and you can go to County Kids Reads and maybe get a free book.
Oh.
Ooh, would you like that?
Walking around the main hall, there is definitely a festive atmosphere as young and old are enjoying conversations, activities, and refreshments. Many of the councillors and staff are giving the mayor credit for the idea, but Mayor Ferguson insists that it was a group effort.
Did you come up with this idea?
How did I come up with it?
Yes.
I don't know that I did. I think it was, you know, we wanted more community involvement. And the, you know, the way to do that is to reduce some of the formality. So we've done that. We've got some activities for kids. And I think, you know, our staff members were really enthusiastic about doing this, particularly my assistant, Joy McLeod. So it seems to have worked out well.
I went out to the arena where the rink was packed with people of all ages enjoying their skating, and back in the community hall, people sipped on coffee or cold drinks, had some tasty treats while chatting with municipal officials. It was definitely a fun family event. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN Cobourg, Dan Jones, with a story about the purchase of essential firefighting equipment by the Cobourg Fire Department.
Cobourg firefighters now have additional equipment to be more safe and efficient when responding to calls following a donation from the Firehouse Subs Public Safety Foundation of Canada. Over $32,000 was donated to the fire department to purchase 7 additional fire-resistant jackets and pants and an ice water rescue suit. Cobourg Fire Chief Ellard Beavin explains the second set of gear will help decrease contaminants for firefighters, allowing them to respond to more calls.
So this is a significant donation to us. This is over $32,000. We bought life-saving equipment with it, 7 sets of bunker gear. This ensures all our staff have a second set of gear. So what this means is after they come back from a fire, they don't have to try to wear this gear that's been contaminated, so they're not exposed to those carcinogens. We're able to put that into our laundry process, and then they can respond to a second call.
The ice water suit will permit rescues on Lake Ontario, as 300 feet of rope is also part of the package. Chief Ellard said his department conducts approximately 5 rescues per year on the lake. Cobourg Firehouse Subs franchise owner Pritwanti Patel said she is a huge supporter of first responders, adding this donation will ensure firefighters have the equipment they need to save lives.
The smaller items that fire departments, police department, or maybe paramedics, they're looking for that normally drops out of their budget. So this is kind of a cushion, that kind of a gap that we want to fulfill in for the community, so that smaller towns, wherever they are lacking whatever equipment, we will try our best in order for us to bring them money so that they can have this and save some lives.
Chief Ellard stated the equipment was purchased 2 months ago and is now in use. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Coming up next, the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Thursday, January 16th, daytime high of -3 with a 40% chance of flurries throughout the day, dropping down to -6 overnight. Friday, January 17th, slightly warmer at -2 and cloudy, only dropping down a single degree to -3 overnight. Saturday, January 18th, we're going to see a daytime high of 2 degrees, but there is a 60% chance of precipitation, a mix of flurries and rain showers, dropping down to -8 overnight. Sunday, January 19th, we will see a daytime high of -5 with a mix of sun and cloud. And as we move into the start of next week, temperatures are going to drop again. Monday, January 20th, we'll see a daytime high of -9, dropping to -16 overnight. And Tuesday, January 21st, it'll be cloudy with a daytime high of -11 and an overnight low of -17.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.